Good evening. This is Milton Rosenberg. Welcome again to Extension 720.
Good evening. This is Milton Rosenberg. We welcome you again to Extension 720.
Good evening. This is Milton Rosenberg. Welcome again to Extension 720. Hello to all. This is Milton Rosenberg.
We'll talk about that tonight on Extension 720.
WGN, a happy Friday night to everyone out there. John Hanson in for Justin Kaufman here on Extension 720, 7:09 in the evening, broadcasting live from the Allstate Skyline Studios above a very busy Chicago River. A lot of boats taking in, well, not only the nice day, but of course the practice day for the Air and Water Show. Looking out at the locks right now, a lot of, imagine a lot more boat traffic tomorrow, and about a million people expected to take over the Chicago lakefront area over the next 2 days. And just a little bit, we're going to chat with a Royal Air Force Red Arrows aerobatic team member, a flight lieutenant that helps out with the engineering on their incredible program. I love it or hate it, the Air and Water Show certainly is loud and it's exciting, a big weekend in Chicago. And it's the first time the Royal Air Force has been in town for this, so it's a pretty big deal. Also going to chat with some folks behind a really cool program called Hoops in the Hoods. These basketball players from all over the city play these weekly games and qualify for this giant tournament that happens downtown tomorrow. Actually close off Columbus Drive and play this big, big basketball tournament. It's all for a great cause, preventing violence, giving kids some positive things to do. And we're going to chat with the event organizers about that in a little bit. And of course, it's the 50th anniversary of Woodstock. I believe yesterday was the start of it, technically, and a multiple-day festival. And of course, as Ro and I were talking about, everyone who was around in 1969 claims they were there, but we're going to chat with someone who was actually at Woodstock. If you were too, feel free to join the conversation then. 312-981-7200. Love for you to chime on in. David Jennings, were you at Woodstock?
You must be joking. What year was that?
69.
1969.
Hey, well, what? One or two?
13.
13. But you didn't make the trip.
No. No way. And now I wouldn't go.
Oh, no. No.
It's like, what? My idea of roughing it involves a motel, okay?
Well, I don't want to know what you do in your personal life.
With air conditioning,
right?
Wi-Fi, someplace decent to eat, know? It's like, what? I'm going to stand in a field in the rain and walk through mud?
Yeah.
Sorry, no.
If I'm going to listen to music, I'm going to listen to Whiskey Creek like we just did in my own comfort of the radio. Pete Zimmerman, you weren't around certainly for Woodstock. I don't know. I can't imagine. I don't want to guess your age. It's our first time we worked together. I don't want to be presumptuous.
What about Woodstock 94?
Yes. Right. And they did. Didn't they do a redo of that? What? And it was a whole celebration of, what was that, been 35 years or 25?
Yeah,
no, it's halfway through, 25.
Yeah. Peace, love, and
something. There or another, yeah, the internet, I don't know. So we're gonna chat with someone that was there and apparently abandoned their car. Pete, it's good to work with you finally for the first time. I filled in here on GN on so many different shifts but never got a chance to chat with you through the glass.
Likewise. And I feel I know you through social media. I see what you're doing every morning.
Right.
And I can't believe that you're here again at night.
Yes.
I see you when I wake up in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we were just talking about that, how you get to know people through social media, Instagram, whatever it is. And you finally get to work together. David, always good to chat with you, too. Are you feeling good on this Friday night?
Yes, I am. It is a Friday. That's a wonderful thing.
You know, there is just that vibe, and it's all over the city. I was driving down Lakeshore Drive, and I hit the traffic right around North Avenue. I didn't even care. I actually turned on the Lakeshore Drive song from the 70s and blared it out my car and just kind of enjoyed the ride on down. Okay, so we're going to take a quick commercial break. Then afterwards, we're going to talk with Flight Lieutenant Alicia Mason from the Royal Air Force Red Arrows Aerobatic Team. You got any questions about what happens to what the pilots are doing, what they're doing, any Air and Water Show questions you got for us, join the conversation. 312-981-7200. We'd love to hear from you. That's coming up next on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, Extension 720. John Hanson here in for Mr. Justin Kaufman, celebrating his birthday this evening, in fact, and a hearty day off to him. We're on till 8:30 till White Sox baseball. Okay, if you live or work anywhere in the downtown area or anywhere near it in the last couple days, you've heard the planes overhead as everyone gets ready for the Air and Water Show. And, of course, the air teams are getting ready themselves. And, wow, what an awesome opportunity here this weekend. The Royal Air Force Aerobatic Team, the Red Arrows, in town for the very first time, and we're very honored to be able to chat with Alicia Mason from the Royal Air Force Red Arrows Aerobatic Team. Flight Lieutenant Alicia, thanks for joining us here.
Hi, how are you?
Thanks for having us. Oh, well, thank you so much for stopping by. You guys have such a busy schedule. How is Chicago treating you guys so far?
Yeah, you know, we're so lucky, honestly. This is our first city, our first stop on the tour of the United States, and what a welcome we've had so far. Honestly, everyone has just been absolutely fantastic and making us feel at home and giving us that warm welcome. And because we've not been flying these last couple of days, so we've had a bit of time to go out and see and explore the city. I've literally just pretty much stepped off that architecture boat tour, which is just incredible, just to see all the sights the city has to offer. And so much amazing architecture around. It's just incredible. So thank you for hosting us. It's such a wonderful city, and we're really looking forward to being able to then showcase that over the harbour and over the lake as well, just so you can see what we do as well. I'm just really pleased to be here.
Well, it's funny, Alicia. If you look up, you can probably see our studio. If I was a little closer to the window, I'd look down and give you a wave. So the Red Arrows, it's nine planes, right, that fly, and you're the flight lieutenant, so you're part of the engineering crew, I imagine, right?
Yep, that's absolutely true, yes. So we have nine planes that do the actual display in the air, but we have a sort of fleet of aircraft like that we can use to swap in and out if we need to as spares. We've got a team of engineers on the ground. There's about 70 of us as technicians that service the aircraft, ready for that display. So it's about a team of 120 personnel in total that keep the planes in the sky. So you've not just got engineers, you've got admin staff, supply staff, survival equipment fitters, you've got empty, you know, the kind of transport drivers as well. The whole team of people that keep those aircraft in the air. So it's quite a big feat, but we love doing it.
So the event is obviously tomorrow and Sunday. You guys had a practice round today. Mm-hmm. What sorts of things could people expect from you? First of all, where in the show are you guys? And then once that show takes off with you guys, obviously they're flying in from Gary, Indiana, just a short little trip on over. You know, without spoiling too much, what sorts of things could people expect from the Red Arrows?
So literally, just look up into the sky at about, I think it's 12:30, we're due to display tomorrow. It's a show of two halves, as they say. It's a 23-minute long show. And the first half is the nine aircraft doing some really fantastic big shapes in the sky, sort of, commemorating a lot of the anniversaries this year for various different aircraft and events that have happened in our history. So we get to see that, some really beautiful, elegant shapes that we do in the sky. And then the second half is a little bit more dynamic. You've got the synchro pair kind of leading the second half with their high-speed bypass of each other and across. And it's a bit noisier, a bit more dynamic, and the great thing we have as well, we have that red, white, and blue smoke that we can really showcase that sort of Union flag, if you like, across the sky with red, white, and blue.
And yeah, I gotta say that I'm not someone that normally, like, I don't like big, loud noises and crowds, but heck, if you're at an air and water show, that's what you're coming for.
Oh yeah, you come for the noise, the sights, the smell as well of that sort of aviation fuel, which we all kind of love. Yeah, it's a really exciting showcase ready for tomorrow. But I think everyone's going to have a really good time looking at the skies over the weekend.
I was reading about the Red Arrows and how the team is formed. At least, certainly, the pilot teams are formed with it's nine pilots and they stay for 3 years. Is that the same for the crew too?
It can be, yes. So, for example, myself, I'm in for 3 years. I'm very lucky that it's normally just two for my job. I actually am in for three because of this tour. It's quite a big tour, so I've sort of stayed on for that continuity. But some of the ground staff, they can be in for 3 years or up to 5 years. That's their sort of contract with the team at that time. So, you know, if you're really lucky, you get to be a part of such an amazing experience for a good 5 years.
And you mentioned kind of the tricks and the things that go on there. I guess talk about, you know, a lot of our listeners have probably been to the Air and Water Show, but probably some haven't, because we have a far reach here at WGN. For someone that's never been to an air show, walk us through maybe what you think is the selling point for not only the Red Arrows, but just for the whole display.
So certainly for me, I mean, I see the display quite regularly, as you can imagine, during the season. But for me, I think the best maneuver we do and that people can be really excited about is a movement called Tornado. And it involves all nine aircraft. So you've got seven aircraft flying along the sky, and then you've got eight and nine looping around that formation, and the coloured smoke is going on as well. So it switches from white smoke with the aircraft and the red eight and nine, red and blue, either side rolling around, and then it switches to the main seven going to colour and eight and nine doing white. So it's and it twists around in front of you in the sky as well. So it's a really breathtaking maneuver, and people just literally go, wow. And there's other maneuvers you do as well, which, you know, particularly some of the synchro, jippo break at the end of the show, where it almost looks like the aircraft are going to just fly into each other, but they don't. There's a good sort of safety margin that we have, and it's the way it's positioned in front of the crowd, it kind of looks like they're going to literally fly right in front of each other. But and so people do that kind of, ooh, and that, wow, those kind of noises they make when they look up to the sky thinking, crikey, what's going on? But actually, it's a very safe maneuver, but it does look very, you know, visually appeasing to the crowd.
You know, Alicia, I've been saying crikey for years. I'm so glad we finally have a British squad there, so it makes more sense. I got to ask, I have dumb questions, and I'm going to have a lot of them, but I imagine our listeners, too. So you're here in North America. I think you guys were in Canada before this, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
So
yeah, we arrived in Halifax and went off to Gatineau, and then in Chicago was our first city in the USA that we stopped at there.
So when you come from England, from across the pond, do these planes, do these jets have enough range that you make it over the ocean in one stop?
No, this is it, you see. We fly the Hawk T Mark 1, which is a British aircraft, and it was sort of designed back in the early, early 70s, really, and it came into service in the UK in 1980. It's quite an old aircraft, and it doesn't have a refueling capability, so to get from one place to another, we've got a maximum flight time of about 2 hours. So you can imagine trying to get all the way from our hometown in Lincoln in the Midlands in the UK, in England, to get all the way over to here. It takes a bit of going, of getting across different countries. So we stopped off at Scotland, we refueled there, then went on to Iceland, New Greenland, and then in the north of Canada, and then kind of came through and made it here. So it took us a few days to get here. Just purely because of the range of the aircraft, we're literally limited to where we can refuel.
Come on, people. They took days to get here. This is your chance to be able to see them. Your favorite part so far? I mean, just being part of the team, it's got to be, I mean, it's kind of like touring in a rock band, I imagine. You get to know your crew a little bit. You kind of get some people that follow along, go tour to tour. I mean, it kind of has a little element of that, right?
It doesn't feel like that sometimes, because, you know, we work incredibly hard. You know, it's long days, it's moving around, you're living out of a suitcase a lot of times, but it is fun. I mean, we all kind of join it, we volunteer to do the job because we love it, and we're all excited about aviation and flying and engineering and all that good stuff. So it's just, every single one of us, honestly, feel like it's a real privilege to be part of this team and part of such an iconic brand that we have in the UK. You know, everybody knows the Royal Air Force, the Red Arrows. And then coming out here as well, sort of, having this big welcome, people are excited to see us. So having that international link as well, it's really been overwhelming. So it's just, everyone has sort of said that they've been a part of this tour. It's just a real career highlight, and it's something we're going to remember for years and years to come. We're going to bore our grandkids with saying, you know, we went to the North America on one of the biggest tours we've ever done as part of the Red Arrow.
That's awesome. I got to say that, you know, I've gone to the air show a couple times. I'll be on a boat tomorrow watching it. Pretty excited to do that with my brother. The best thing in the world is having a brother that owns a boat, not yourself. But he takes us out there, and it's breathtaking. But, you know, I would be remiss if I didn't say, you know, it is still very technical. I mean, I think we look at this and we assume there's this, you know, air of safety around. And of course there is, and there's going to be, hopefully, knock on wood, a perfectly safe event. But you guys are really focused not only during, obviously, the pilots during what's going on, but you guys are probably watching it with bated interest, and of course what's happening beforehand. I mean, there's a lot of technical things. You guys really obviously put a premium on safety.
We absolutely, and it's, safety is always going to be paramount in whatever we do, whether it's with display or whether it's just training sport or something like that. So we take that very, very seriously indeed. And yes, what we do is, there is an element of danger there. There's a risk to it, but that's what makes it exciting, and that's sort of that element of danger. But there's always going to be under a safety net, so we have a lot of regulations that we adhere to. In fact, we've got a quality team out here that are assessing us as they do regularly throughout the UK, in the Air Force as well. We have a team that will constantly audit us. You know, we're not outside that realm of being under a policy. So we adhere to these regulations that are set out for us, and that sort of helps us to make sure we put on not only a good show, but a safe show for everybody.
Get a good eight hours of sleep tonight, or are there some nerves there?
There's always going to be nerves, I mean, and certainly for everybody, but it's what we do, so we're kind of used to that cycle now, so we're like, okay, get some good sleep, get up early, and as engineers, we get to the airport first, and we're there ahead of everybody, getting the aircraft prepped and ready, and make sure they're ready, because we service the aircraft every time it flies. We service it before it flies, and then when it lands, we service it again to make sure it's all ready to go for the next one. And yeah, so it's a cycle we're kind of used to doing now. But yeah, it can get quite tiring.
Yes.
But, it's exciting at the same time.
Last question. You just did the architecture tour. What are you doing this afternoon and evening? Where are you going to eat?
Do you know what? There's a few of us here debating about let's have a traditional, good old Chicago town style pizza, because that's what we've come here to eat, basically.
I don't know if they'll make weight in the plane tomorrow if that happens. That's always the problem. I know there's some really strict weight limitations. Yeah, do a good deep dish pizza. You got to do that at least some point, okay, Alicia?
Okay.
Alicia Mason from the Red Arrows. You can catch him in the sky tomorrow and on Sunday at 12:30. Hey, enjoy your time and good luck tomorrow, okay?
Thanks, John. Thanks very much for having us.
Absolutely. Okay. Plenty more after this on 720 WGN.
Basketball, Chi-Town, WGN.
Who gonna stop me? I hoop with the best of them. Swooped up the chest of them. Dunked on a bunch.
720 WGN. Extension 720. John Hanson in for Justin Kaufman. Up for about another 55 minutes up till White Sox baseball pregame at 8:30 as the Sox are on the West Coast out in Anaheim battling the Angels in game two of their series. We mentioned the Air and Water Show, but we're short of nothing in Chicago. In the summer, we have so many great activities going on every single weekend. But this next one I want to talk about is really an awesome organization, a great cause, and a really cool and fun event. I'm talking about Hoops in the Hoods. And joining me now to chat about it is Ashley Whalen from LISC and their communications manager. And Courtney Holman, guys, thanks for coming on here today.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, Hoops in the Hoods. Tell me about it, Ashley.
Sure. So Hoops in the Hood is a sports-based community safety initiative at its core. We've been doing this for 13 years. Currently, we are in 17 neighborhoods.
And when you say we, you mean LISC?
LISC with our 17 community partners.
Got it.
Yes. So LISC kind of oversees the network, and our partners do all of the work on the ground every summer running the programs. It looks a little different in every neighborhood, so the neighborhood runs it how they see fit. Some neighborhoods move to different hotspots and blocks every single Friday night, Saturday, and then some reclaim a gym or a public park space. It's really up to them. And then it's more than just basketball, right? So it's bringing peers together, meeting peers from their neighborhood, from other neighborhoods, caring adults coming out and, you know, watching and cheering their kids on. But Courtney can tell you a little bit about what they do. A lot of them have peace circles. There's DJs, food. So kids are really also learning leadership skills, and they're around caring and adults, you know, all summer long.
So it culminates in a big event tomorrow, right?
It does. It's our 13th annual Hoops in the Hood Cross City Tournament. We are partnering with the Chicago Park District and State Farm, and we're closing down Columbus Drive from Balboa to Roosevelt. And I don't think that's been done since the 90s when the Bulls did it.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool. Yeah. So if you're shaking your fist at the traffic troubles tomorrow, know that it's for a really good cause. Okay, Courtney, you run the basketball stuff at Auburn Gresham, right?
Yes.
So how do you guys do it? How do you guys operate throughout the summer?
So we have eight events as well, and so six of them are inside of the Arc of St. Sabinus on the south side of Chicago, and then we have two community events where we're outside in the community with St. Sabina block parties, which have a lot of people from the communities that come out inside of the Arc during those sessions. We thought it was important to just kind of talk to the guys about and females about sportsmanship, so skills on and off the court, because reality is they come together for a fun game, but there's so much to talk about and things that's kind of happening in the neighborhood. And just we wanted to kind of pick their brain, see where they were, and you know, just kind of what they thought about basketball, period, or how they were feeling, what was happening at home. So we tried to dig for that.
So basketball can be the gathering mechanism, but then obviously conversations can get started from there.
Exactly.
So is it 3-on-3? Like, what's the format? Or is it 5-on-5? How does it go?
So we run 5-on-5 right, every week.
Full court?
And so, full court.
Okay.
And so our teams, they play weekly. And so it's, you know, it's a prize. It's a treat for the, you know, the team with the most wins to make it to the Cross City Tournament.
How many teams were participating this year?
So we had 8 teams this year.
Wow. So out of those 8, there's only one that made it to the tournament.
Best record, you know, or players with the best stats.
Mm-hmm.
Those most excited. I mean, we're talking about, you know, Grant Park, where, you know, Chicago basketball fans love Grant Park. We remember the 90s, Michael Jordan.
Yes.
It's a dream come true.
Yeah. And mentioning the Bulls, obviously some of them former alums of the Bulls are going to be there tomorrow too, right? right?
Yes, we have Mickey Johnson and Bob Love that are going to join us.
Oh, those are nice names.
Yes, as well as Benny the Bull. So I think our kids will be excited for him.
Anytime you get Benny anywhere, you are there is going to be some fun hat. He's going to be messing around with people. So then all the teams are 5-on-5 that they do it, or do different places do different things?
Different places do different things. Most of them do 5v5, but some do 3v3. At the tournament, of course, it's 5v5. Mm-hmm. And our partners can bring up to 4 teams. So we have a peewee team, which is 8 to 10-year-olds. We have a minor league, which is 11 to 14. We also have that for girls. And then majors, which is 15 to 19. This year, we have a record number of teams. We have 36 teams participating.
Wow.
6 are girls. And really, 36 teams, if you think about it, like think about March Madness, that's about a 3 to 4 day tournament that we are going to fit into one day.
Mm-hmm. That's incredible. Is it all single elimination, or is it a pretty crazy bracket?
It's a crazy bracket. So we start at pool play, and then you get eliminated from pool play, and then you go into bracket.
So it's
legit.
It's a whole day long thing. I mean, I imagine obviously everyone comes together for a good cause, and there's a lot of kumbaya feel to it, but these things got to get competitive, Courtney.
Absolutely.
They're not messing around.
Absolutely. They practiced tonight already.
Yeah. So our team practiced this afternoon.
Wow.
They want to be ready for tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So is there any prizes that come along with this? How does that work?
Yes. So all of our athletes tomorrow will get backpacks filled with school supplies courtesy of State Farm. But the winners are going to get, the major leagues get tickets to the Cubs.
Oh, cool.
The minor leagues get tickets to the White Sox.
Okay.
All of the 4 champions.
You're here on the White Sox carrier station, so.
All of the 4 champions will get tickets to a Bulls game.
Cool.
And then the girls will get a suite to the Chicago Sky.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then we're actually this year giving every youth that participates tickets to Chicago Sky game.
Oh, that's really cool stuff. And the Sky have been doing pretty well this year. They had a little rough patch here, but playing a couple games here this weekend. I think they're tonight and Sunday. All right. So obviously these are sparking conversations. It's important stuff. This is part of obviously a summer initiative when we really need to focus on giving kids really positive, energetic things to do all over the city. And I imagine that's been a successful part of the program and something you guys hope to keep going forward as the years go on, Courtney.
Absolutely. We've been with them 3 years, and every year we look forward to it. It just provides a level of exposure for our youth and keeps them connected, and it's a great opportunity for them.
Ashley, can anyone come to this? How does this work?
Absolutely. We'd love for people to come out, cheer on our youth. The more the merrier. They can watch basketball. We have face painting. We have a bounce house. We have a gaming truck. We have Evelyn's Food Love coming to cater. So if you want to come, walk down, walk through on your way to the Aaron Water Show, you are more than welcome.
You know, it's we were just in Bud Billiken a couple last Saturday, just less than a week ago. And I've been in Bud a couple times now with my folks over at the Jam at WCIU. And I'm always blown away at how cool it is to give a lot of the youngsters, I know I sound like a really old person saying that, the youngsters of our community. No, there's a lot of performance arts groups in those. There's a lot of the drill teams get to do that. A lot of the dance teams get to do it. It's so great to be able to give kids a chance to show off their talents, especially in the arts, of course, because we're losing a lot of arts programs at our schools, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. That's a sidebar. That was on my soapbox for a moment. We need to get back some of those. But what a cool opportunity. Like, look, I mean, some of these kids might go on to successful basketball careers. That's great. A lot of them, the reality is, of course, that this is one of their big moments to shine. Yeah. Courtney, that must be something that drives these players forward. Look, this is going to be an audience. This is a chance to win. This is just a cool thing that just kind of keeps everyone motivated and driven towards something. Absolutely. Is that what you've heard back? What are some stories that you've heard from some of the people that have participated in this?
Specifically last year, I mean, it was really just about exposure. Like, they were, excited to be a part of Grant Park. Again, these kids are growing up talking about Michael Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's endless possibilities for them. But then the other thing that I love about it is there are a lot of talented kids on the south side of Chicago. Everybody doesn't make their school team.
Mm-hmm.
Hoops in the Hoods provides opportunities for those who didn't make the school team, didn't get to travel to other places to, you know, be in their hometown and come, you know, downtown where, you know, they really haven't been.
The only thing I could see that's a negative about this is they all know this means it starts the end of the summer. That's the only thing. But in this means that they got to go back to school.
Back
but that's
okay.
I mentioned that's part of the emphasis, too. And that's part of the thing about, you know, getting to make sure everyone's got school supplies and ready to go for the school year. Because the reality is a lot of people aren't blessed to be able to have that ready to go on day one.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
All right, Ronnie, you recap again one more time what it is, where people can go, and if they people want more information on it.
Sure. So tomorrow is the 13th annual Hoops in the Hood Cross City Tournament. We are closing down Columbus Drive from Balboa to Roosevelt. Games will start at 10 a.m. They'll go to about 3:30 p.m. Everyone is welcome to come. And for more information, you can go to lisc.org. That's LISC.org. /Chicago.
And I got one more minute. I want to give you a chance to talk about LISC really quickly.
Yeah.
What you guys do. I've been mentioning it a couple times. What it stands for and what you guys do.
Sure. So LISC stands for Local Initiatives Support Corporation. We are actually headquartered in New York. We have 35 offices across the country. We've been doing work in Chicago since 1980. And really, really simply put, we support local initiatives in primarily underserved neighborhoods.
That's great. Hey, Courtney, is Auburn Gresham going to win tomorrow?
And listen, this practice today, I think the team is ready to win.
Were you watching? Were you scouting?
The team is ready to win. I was not watching, but I know about it. I know the coaches very well, staff member of the ARC, and so they're ready to bring back, you know, a trophy tomorrow.
Good luck, all right?
Thank you.
Thanks for stopping on by, guys. More to this on Extension 720 on WGN. Extension 720, John Hanson in for Justin Kaufman till 8:30. We take you right up to a White Sox pregame. Okay, I love to bring on my good buddy, Blockbuster Blake. Blake is the last counter operator at the last Blockbuster in the country. Blake, how you doing, buddy?
Doing well, John. Thank you for that glorious introduction. But I want to remind you, Tarantino and Kevin Smith both worked behind video store counters, and they turned out fine. So there you go.
So there's still hope for you yet, yeah, Blockbuster Blake. Hey, we would be remiss if we didn't mention the news that Peter Fonda passing away, and obviously a long legacy of films he's been a part of.
Absolutely. Rich Hollywood lineage with his family, his dad, Henry Fonda, sister Jane, daughter Bridget, but also Easy Rider is a major film, I think, especially in that cornerstone of films in 1969 that started to change the way people looked on the big screen. And then I'm going to throw a little love out for my cult favorite of his, which is actually a film about a cult called Race with the Devil with Warren Oates. Definitely worth a look-see. It's a little wild, but it's very 1970s.
When you say
that's a big loss.
When you say change the way people look, what do you mean?
Well, I mean, it's funny because this kind of parlays into that conversation we had recently about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, where you were seeing all these people look super clean cut with pompadours, and you know, smoking on television was kind of this thing just for ads to be broadcast. Well, there was a transition. People started to have longer hair, facial hair, just a completely different look. And hippie is not exactly the word I would use, but they definitely had a counterculture look. Fonda sort of helped usher that in, I think, on the big screen in a big way with Easy Rider alongside Dennis Hopper. And they collaborated. They both wrote the film. Hopper very much directed the film. And the end product is quite a trippy film, pretty wild, but very, very interesting. Fonda just had a great look, I think, on camera. And different for that period of time when films were starting to change the way the people in front of the camera looked. So.
Hey, yeah, and we're going to move on from that, but it's obviously something that people will be paying homage to. I wonder if, I don't even know, I didn't, not to put you on the spot, Easy Rider, I don't know, can you stream that anywhere? I got to admit, I've never seen Easy Rider, and I think that sometimes when we lose stars like this, it's an opportunity to revisit their most important work, and I don't know, maybe on Amazon Prime, YouTube somewhere, maybe it's on Netflix.
Yeah, so Amazon Prime, I believe you can rent it for about $4 and watch it.
Okay.
So if you want to get at Easy Rider and you want to see what I'm talking about and what Peter Fonda, or maybe just revisit the film.
Mm-hmm.
It's available on Amazon Prime, I believe, for about $4.
You say it's on Netflix
or whatever. But
you say it's on Netflix? He was looking at it. He's looking at it right now. We'll find that out before we get to the news. I just want to pivot to one other thing, not really movie related, Blake. I don't know if you saw the story of Patton Oswalt was in Chicago last night, stand-up comedian who I know you've worked with, and they had to go up on a rooftop and do a stand-up bit, and in the building next door, you know how Chicago is, there's everyone's kind of living on top of each other, and there was a window and a guy in it, and Patton Oswalt did kind of some audience work with a guy in a building across the way, even got a couple beers over to him, talked with him. That's pretty much right up with the personality that you met with Patton, right?
It very much is Patton Oswalt, at least the Patton Oswalt I got to know a little bit. He's a wonderful guy. If you ever get a chance to meet him in person, he's a brilliant comic. I like to think of him as the kind of guy that when he gets to meet with his fans, he wants to give them that I'm always on vibe, and I think that it's always a treat when fans get to meet him. And I'm sure that this person that he was talking to was a little shocked, but at the same time, probably had a great time interacting with him. And we actually have a mutual friend who's at his second show, I believe right now, on the very same rooftop.
Oh,
and
wow.
From what I could tell, a little pre-show action, I got a little picture from the audience there, and it's pretty packed, and it looks like it's going to be a heck of a good time. So, yeah, I think it's cool that they made that little hot move, like Audible, to like get them to a better venue, I guess, because more people now can see the show.
Can you imagine you're just sitting in your living room and you hear the voice of in Ratatouille, and you're like, what the heck is that? And there's Patton Oswalt then talking to you, put in part of the act. Pretty good stuff. And they did end up getting some beers over to him and his wife that was sitting on by. Good stuff. All right, Blake, I want to pivot to it's the weekend, obviously. A lot of people love to go outside, experience great things. Many of us like to sit around or some combination of both. So let's talk about things that we can do. Maybe your top three or four picks for what you can do either in the theater this weekend or maybe if you want to sit on the couch and stream, some options for you.
Well, right now, I know that tomorrow I'm going to be heading out to see Good Boys, which stars Jacob Tremblay, who a lot of people might remember from Room, that starred Brie Larson. He played her son in that. But this is a film that's produced by Seth Rogen and company. It's a bunch of young boys. It looks pretty wild, pretty goofy, very much R-rated. While it does star kids, keep the kids at home. But it looks to be very funny, and early reactions are very positive. A couple friends I know saw it last night, said they couldn't stop laughing. So it got me in the mood. I'm going to go out tomorrow afternoon and catch a matinee.
Okay.
Another big thing I would rush to do right now, at least I won't lie, it's sitting on pause right now on my television, is Mindhunter,
yes.
Which the second season came out. I guess it was kind of overnight, early wee hours of this morning. I've been anxiously awaiting the second season of that show.
Yeah.
I think it is brilliantly put together.
For people that don't know Mindhunter, the first season, I mean, walk us through the plot of it a little bit.
So essentially what it tries to do is depict the period of time where the FBI went from just tracking the good guy and putting him behind bars to trying to understand the worst of the worst. And by that, we know them as serial killers. But this was at a time before that term was even coined. And it shows a couple of agents and a psychologist who sort of develops a new style of fighting crime in a way. But it gets very cerebral. You get to see a lot of their one-on-ones with the worst of the worst. And they hire, this is actually one of the biggest hooks of the show, I think, they hire excellent actors who are dead ringers for these deviant people, these horrible people that apparently, you know, we all the public are fascinated with.
Mm-hmm.
And so their depictions are pretty much dead on. Cameron Britton as Ed Kemper is a big one this year. The same actor, actually, I think his name is Damien Hunnam. I might be mispronouncing his name there. I know I'm mispronouncing his name, but the same actor who played Charles Manson in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood will be playing him a little bit older in Mindhunter. And if you've seen a photo of the makeup job that they did for him, it might stun you.
Really?
He is, it's uncanny how much he looks like the real Charles Manson. And so get ready for some twists and turns. I'm about 4.5 episodes in, and it's good. It's very good. I'm very much loving it. Looking forward to getting back to that very soon.
Yes.
And then,
sorry, Blake, we don't mean to keep you from Mindhunter. We'll get you back in about a minute or two. I got to say, though, Mindhunter is on the list of things I'm watching by myself. Enrique has given a strict, I'm not watching that. I remember last year I watched the entire thing on my iPhone in my bed while he was sleeping. So I was able to do that, and I imagine season two will be much of the same. All right, pick number three for this weekend. Last pick, what you can do.
Very much a thing that just came out recently that I have just caught up on and looking to dive into, which is GLOW season 3. The show about the gorgeous ladies of wrestling, but it's very much a drama and comedy all rolled into one. Very funny, very good on the wrestling front. As a lifelong wrestling fan, I very much enjoy what they've done with the show. And at the same time, it's getting a lot of Emmy recognition from its second season. So I'm hoping they'll ride that wave and give us another good third. Now, it's been out a long time. I know a lot of people have probably seen it, but I have yet to. So that's on my list, and I'm going to recommend it to everybody else as well.
All right, Blockbuster Blake, get back to Mindhunter, buddy.
Will do. Thank you, guys. Have a great weekend.
He's already hit play on that thing. All right, Blake, thanks so much for joining us. All right, plenty more coming up here on Extension 720 on WGN after this. Extension 720, John Hanson in for Justin Kaufman on this abbreviated show for another 23 minutes or so. We're taking you right up to White Sox pregame, then, of course, the game as well. As David Jennings was giving you the Cubs score, Tony Kemp hit an RBI double for the Cubbies. They now lead the Pirates 2-1. Literally, David, right as you were saying it, so I think you're the good luck charm if you're a Cubs fan out there. And actually, I just saw behind me, Pete, saw some lightning over the water. Looks like we got a little storm popping up over Lake Michigan heading east towards Michigan. Also, another cell near Joliet. So if you're in the area, don't worry. You're going to have some rain and showers moving through the area. Just be prepared for that as you travel about here throughout the evening. Okay, I wanted to talk about Woodstock. And my next guest came to me in a very unique way. Lindsay Rice, who's a good friend of mine, former journalist at DNA Info Chicago, now bought a company and also runs her own company. She's married to a great guy named Connor. Well, she was on the jam this morning talking about one of her companies that she works for. And we were just chatting with her and her husband, and she happened to mention that her father-in-law, Connor's dad, was in the town and was talking about Woodstock, how he went to Woodstock. And I said, you know, I'm on WGN tonight. I've got to finally talk to someone who legitimately went to Woodstock. Mark Reich, you are on Extension 720 right now. And please, I know a lot of people say they were there, but you were really there.
I was really there, and thank you for having me on this evening. Yeah, I was there with my best friend of 50 years, who has visited me this weekend, and is two 18-year-old, recently graduated from high school kids. We hitchhiked, and we hitchhiked 250 miles.
From where? What inspired you to go, and how did you get there? And where'd you come from?
I lived in Massachusetts at the time, about 50 miles outside of Boston, and with the lineup that was advertised for Woodstock on all of the FM radio stations, word of mouth, and in the New York Times, which everybody read it at that point, there was this tremendous rock concert that was going to be held in Bethlehem, New York. And in those days, I had to hitchhike 25 miles to buy our tickets, which I still have. Hanging in a frame in my home, and we bought the tickets. We hitchhiked out, starting on the Thursday before the concert. We hitchhiked on the New York Thruway, got picked up by the state police, kindly escorted off, and continued our travels the next day. And when the traffic stopped, we started walking.
Oh my God.
And I clocked it about 15 years later when I was in that area. And I realized that we had walked over 10 miles.
Wow.
And we got there just before Richie Havens started. We saw everything on Friday evening, on Saturday, and on Sunday after the rains came and Joe Cocker was on. We said, I believe we've had enough, and we headed home.
So you didn't get too much of the mud that it's notorious for.
Well, we got a lot of the mud, and the mud was so thick that it ended up pulling the soles off of my shoes.
Really?
Really, really.
So did you have any idea what you were getting yourself into?
We had no idea. Absolutely no idea, as I don't believe anybody did. They had anticipated possibly about 100,000 people to show up, and close to 500,000 showed up. To the concert.
Where did you sleep?
Well, the first night we slept down by the stage underneath a tarp because it was raining out.
Near the stage under a tarp. So you just saw the concert, found the nearest tarp, and went underneath.
That is correct. That's where we slept. And on Saturday evening, after Janis Joplin came on, we had had a very long day, and we just took our sleeping bags, went up into the woods, and slept under the stars.
Wow. So, first of all, how old were you when you were doing this?
18.
So you mentioned your did you mention you have kids, or your friend has kids that are 18 years old?
No, neither one of us have children of that age. Connor, my son, who's married to Lindsay Rice, he's 30. And his brother Brendan is 27.
Okay, now would you have recommended Connor? I mean, Connor's into music and all that stuff, and he's a hip guy. When he was 18, would you have ever let him do this?
I don't believe so. Well, they did go to Lollapalooza.
Yeah,
but they didn't have to hitchhike.
And they didn't have to sleep under a
tent. Under the stars.
Yes, exactly. So when people look back on it, and it's reached, of course, this cult remembrance and, you know, so many stories, did it live up to that, or are we kind of painting it in a different picture than what it was really like?
It was wonderful. If you ever get the chance to see the new documentary called Woodstock, 3 Days That Defined a Generation, they do an excellent job of, from beginning to end, of the personal stories of the people that were there, and kind of the outtakes from the original movie. And it really did paint a wonderful picture. People ask me, you know, they talk about hippies here and hippies there. I look at it as there were just a bunch of kids, most of them college kids, that went to a concert with bands that they don't feel that they would have ever see again. And everything just came together. When it was about to implode, it was over.
Yeah.
And everybody went home. So there wasn't any tragedy. There wasn't any sickness, anything like that, because it was just 3 days from beginning to end, and then it was done.
My dad was 19 when Woodstock was happening, and my mother a little younger than that, and I lovingly called them hippies, which they remain to this day in many of their own ways, while also holding down quote-unquote real jobs or retiring from them by now. Would you have considered yourself a hippie at the time, or do you find that word to be, I don't know, offensive maybe isn't the word, but what do you think when people say, oh, those hippies?
No, it was a bunch of college kids, young people that was just out to see the groups that they admired and that they loved in those days.
I guess what I'm saying is, were you there for the peace part of it, or were you there for the music part of it?
For the music, okay. Without a doubt. We were there for the music. And I had just graduated from high school. It was a perfect segue because I was starting college in a couple of weeks. And in between my high school year and my college year, there was this event called Woodstock. And 50 years later, it's amazing that people are still talking about it. And I've been fortunate. The Republic Bank of Chicago has had a wonderful traveling photo exhibit going around to their different branches for the last couple of months, and they've been kind enough to have invited me to be one of the featured speakers.
Oh, wow.
To tell people on opening night at each of the branches what it was like, what the experiences were, and having a conversation just like we're having tonight.
So give us a plug. Have you already done the speech, or are you doing that here in the near future?
I did the opening for the photo exhibit last night at the Oak Brook Branch, and it's been very similar to what I've been talking with you about this evening.
So I got to ask, people in Rokan, the host before me, was talking about how everyone who is around then loves to claim that they were there. Is there like a shibboleth, like some sort of test that you could ask someone to really make sure that they were there? Is there something that only people that went to Woodstock would really be able to answer? Or has it been covered so much that anyone could fake it?
I think just about anybody could fake it, but then I would ask that person why.
Right.
But I've got a couple of pieces of memorabilia. Of course, I still have my ticket.
Wait, did you wear the same? You wore the same clothes the whole time, I imagine, right?
The whole time.
From hitchhiking all the way through the end.
All the way through the end. We brought an extra T-shirt. Other than that, we had jeans, boots, a T-shirt, and a sleeping bag. That's all we had.
What did your parents say? Not to presume, I don't know if your parents were around at the moment, but did they have any words to say, or any other relatives or family members?
Oh, they certainly did.
Can you say any of those words on TV, on radio?
They had a lot to say, but when it was finally over, my dad grudgingly admitted that both myself and my best friend were able to experience something that 50 years later, we're still talking about.
At what point did you realize, was it when you got there or maybe years later, just how big of a cultural phenomenon you got to experience firsthand?
I believe that when we got there, we were walking up the hill to the concert venue, and as we got to the top of the hill over the ridge,
We couldn't see what we were about to experience. And when we got to the top, we looked down, and there were like 100, 150,000 people. And it was like, oh, my gosh, this is going to be something. Mm-hmm. We had never experienced it before. So many people in one place. And that's due to the fact that in this country, anyways, I don't believe there were that many people in one place ever.
Tell us about the music. Tell us about the sound. Did it live up to expectation?
Sound lived up to expectations. People will always ask me, who was your favorite band?
Yeah.
And to this day, I will swear, Creedence Clearwater Revival.
A little CCR.
The band. Because they were new to the scene at that particular point. They had this this rhythm and this beat that no other band at that time had. It was more of a bayou sound, and remember it vividly. In fact, I always remember that the ground was shaking because of the beat of the music and because the kids were dancing and jumping up and down to it.
I'm looking at the list, the rundown of who performed and when they performed. CCR performed technically Sunday morning, late Saturday night, at 12:30 in the morning. And then Janis Joplin comes after. They followed up the Grateful Dead. I mean, this set list from 10:30 p.m. through the night is insane.
Right.
I mean, the Who came on at 5 in the morning on Sunday morning. This thing was packed. How did you sleep?
After Joplin came on and she was done, that's when we went up on Saturday night, Sunday morning, into the woods to get some sleep.
Into the woods.
That's right, into the woods.
All right, Mark, thank you so much for sharing these memories. Any one moment, the last question that just stands out to you that you is just indelible, you'll never forget?
Well, it was when we were leaving after Cocker and the rain on Sunday afternoon. A old beat-up van slowly drove by us with the window down and said, I said to them, where are you going? And they said, Providence. Where are you going? We jumped into the van and we said, Providence. And we drove all night, and they dropped us off at the Providence, Rhode Island bus station, and we took a Greyhound back to our hometown 75 miles away, and it was felt as if we had been picked up by a spaceship on Thursday afternoon and dropped in our hometown back on Monday morning.
Oh.
And never to be the same again.
Mark, we'll leave it at that. Thanks so much for joining us. Okay, say hi to Connor and Lindsay for me, okay?
I certainly will. Thanks for having me.
All right, we'll wrap things up next on Extension 720 after this. All right, Extension 720 for about another 5.5 minutes until we get to White Sox baseball. Just some notes of Woodstock. I'm just reading through the lineup. This is fascinating. Richie Havens, you heard Mark mention, started things off right at 5:07 on Friday, August 15th. He was moved up to the opening performance after Sweetwater was stopped by police en route to the festival, and other artists were delayed on the freeway. Okay, that's an interesting story. Joan Baez played technically Saturday morning, so midnight, 12:55 in the morning till 2 a.m. She did 1 hour and 5 minutes while she was 6 months pregnant at Woodstock, which is pretty incredible. Scrolling through some of these other notes, country Joe McDonald was brought in for an unscheduled emergency solo performance when Santana wasn't ready yet. He performed again the next day. Other notes here as we continue on. The Grateful Dead, I mentioned, 10:30 p.m. on Saturday night. It was only their set was cut short after stage amps overloaded during Turn On Your Love Light. And then you heard Mark mention CCR in the early next morning. Janis Joplin doesn't go on until 2 in the morning. 2 to 3 in the morning on Sunday morning. The Who up at 5 a.m., briefly interrupted by Abby Hoffman. That's insane. Jefferson Airplane takes the stage at 8 a.m. till 9:04. I mean, who's awake? I mean, I guess you just roll through the whole night, and roll is, I guess, an appropriate word for some folks at this thing. Joe Crocker and the Grease Band, played the Sunday morning, Little Help from My Friends. A thunderstorm then started things, as you heard Mark say. Other interesting notes, an acoustic and electric set played by Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. Neil Young skipped most of the acoustic set And then Jimi Hendrix at 9 a.m. till 11:10 a.m. Monday morning. So it went into Monday morning at 11:10 a.m. Jimi Hendrix performed to a considerably smaller crowd, fewer than the 200,000 people. As Mark mentioned, you know, so many people showed up, but I imagine a lot of people started to stream on home once the rain really started to get really intense. Bob Dylan declined going, Led Zeppelin as well, Simon and Garfunkel, Chicago didn't end up going, The Doors said no, Frank Zappa, the Moody Blues. But man, you even look after those no's list. What an amazing lineup of artists. Get a chance to look through it, listen to some music, and enjoy. I'd say everyone, the challenge is listen to Joan Baez at 12:55 in the morning sometime, and you'll really experience it. All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break, then wrap things up here on Extension 720. That'll do it for me, John Hanson, in for Justin Kaufman on Extension 720. Pete, thanks for all your help, of course. The White Sox staged a late comeback yesterday. Couldn't get it done, though. Game two tonight, Lucas Giolito on the bump for the White Sox. He had 13 strikeouts last time. We'll find out if they can fare better tonight. And pregame starts right now.